CBSSports.com basketball podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I've got Matt Moore on the Skype carrier pigeon. Matt, how's it going?
I'm good, man. How's your weekend?
It was great. You know, a few times a year, we get one of those NBA League Pass nights that are just sensational. It's great game after great game, three great games going at once, and they're all staggered a little bit, so you can keep switching to like the last 3 minutes of each game. And that's what we had Saturday night. We had one bad game, the Bobcats-Mavs game. Everything else was sensational. A lot of, you know, there were a couple of games that ended in 10-point victories, but I believe they were both overtime games. Everything else within like 8 to 2 points. Brandon Jennings hits the game winner. Just a fun, fun night of basketball on Saturday.
Yeah, and I missed most of it. Saturday is like the day that I try and get away from the game. But I did watch, I watched Miami-Denver, and then I watched, what else did I watch? I watched one more that night. But yeah, it's been good, man. The opening slate of games, it's nice to have the normal season back to where,
yeah,
even though there's not like the big headliner game on, I actually prefer that because you get to see, I think, more of these other kinds of teams.
Yeah, I was looking at the schedule for this coming week, and I was like, three games on Tuesday? What is going on? And one, like, obviously the election. And two, I was like, oh, right, we're not cramming, you know, 8 months of basketball into 5 months. Like, this is going
to
be...
Yeah, so it's working out well. And yeah. It's nice because we get to kind of digest things a little bit more.
Yeah, no, It is nice, like, you do have the big nights of 10 and 12 games, but it's not every night except for Thursdays. Like, it feels like, you know, it feels like we have a real NBA again until 5 years from now. When Adam Silver is just the evil that we all hate.
It's nice because also, you know, we've had really a pretty competitive game almost every single night. We haven't really had a dud night. You know, we had because last night was a small slate, but Hawks Thunder was just fantastic from beginning to end.
Yeah, that was really good.
And then Denver Miami on Saturday, there was, I think, at one point, and this was not the final one, but like at some point late in the fourth quarter, there were 11 lead changes and 9 ties.
And that was a game where, you know, I was following it, but I wasn't quite paying attention because I was trying to watch other games at the same time. But I had it off to the side, and I looked up and it was like 50-43. I was like, oh, okay, like still close. And then I looked at the time and there was like 6:36 left in the second quarter. I was like, good God, like it was just. I mean, obviously the defense wasn't good, but it just seemed like it was good offense.
It was, which is, you know, the you hope for the Nuggets that they're going to get that back on track because they've been – the first two games, they were unquestionably the worst team in the league.
Yeah.
They were worse than Detroit, and that's impressive.
Speaking of Detroit, Lakers get back on track last night. I mean
– Everything's solved.
79-3 is within grasp. What did you think of – I mean, Detroit sucks. Clearly, when Kobe takes 10 shots or less in a game, the Lakers are going to win. So maybe just no more of him. We should cap it at ten shots. But what did you think of the? Was there anything to take from the game, or is it just they beat a crappy opponent?
Dwight's getting better.
Yeah, he looked good.
I think that's a big takeaway because one thing I noticed, and I'm going to be kind of writing about this more today on CBS, is Dwight's rotation has been really bad defensively. And
yeah.
He got back on track, I felt like, in the second half of the game against the Clippers and in the entire game yesterday. Now, granted, some of it was he was getting away with so much. Like at one point, what he did to Brandon Knight can really be considered assault in several states. And the officials were just like, you know, it's one where it's not only are the Pistons terrible, and they are terrible, which is just disappointing because I keep hoping that they're going to get it together, and they just don't. You know, they're starting slow. I think that they're probably going to do the same thing they did last year, which is they're going to play competitive around 500-ish after the first month and then still miss the playoffs by 10 games because they start off with this horrific start. But with the Lakers, like I've long said this, whether you come in on Sunday morning or you come in on Saturday night, I feel like going into Los Angeles for a Sunday game is the worst thing that can happen to you. Because you either went out partying and then probably made a long trip west to LA, or you went into LA the night before and partied even harder because it's LA. And then I just noticed the Lakers are always really good. Their opponents are always terrible on Sundays. And that's not I have no data to back that up, but I always feel like you just, my least favorite game if I'm an opponent is playing the Lakers on a Sunday.
Yeah. it does seem like maybe there's a little bit of a sluggishness, at least to start games. No matter who's going into LA on a Sunday, the backcourt for the Pistons, they had 9 assists. Stuckey and Knight combined for 9 assists, but they had 5 turnovers, all of them Brandon Knight, combined 1 for 14 from the field for 2 points, no free throw attempts, and maybe they should have had some free throw attempts because of missed calls or whatever you want to say, but that's not a recipe for success.
Well, Stuckey's, I think, 1 for 23 from the field this season.
That's a problem.
and that's going to be pretty bad. Knight.
Yeah, he's shooting 4.3%.
Oh, God.
That sounds low.
That sounds awful low.
Yeah.
And Knight, I think, he was battling plantar fasciitis, and he was having an issue early on in the preseason. I wonder if that was going to affect him. Knight really did show, he worked really hard in the offseason. I still think that he's going to be pretty good. But, yeah, right now it's just not coming together. And, I keep pinning it on Tayshaun Prince, which isn't really fair. The entire team is terrible. But I always feel like if you had a younger, more dynamic small forward, maybe you'd have something to go to kind of anchor this team.
Sure.
The Pistons are one where I would not be opposed to trading for Amari Stoudemire. That's how bad they are.
Wow.
If you put Stoudemire and Monroe together and be like, if he's injured, fine, but we need something different.
Wow, I can't even, Prince would have to be involved. I guess Villanueva would have to be involved just to make the contract. That's a big contract for the Pistons to match.
And they would like it, though. That's the thing, is the Knicks, if you tell the Knicks you can get Tayshaun and Villanueva, they probably like it. Veteran guys, they like to shoot a lot.
They don't. They don't need. They don't need knee debridement or whatever it was called.
Exactly. And Pistons fans are going to freak out and say no. But it's like, look, you're a ways away. It's early. Maybe they can get this thing turned around. But I need to go back and watch it again. It looked a lot, and people commented on this game. They really went away from the Princeton. They just kind of let the guys go out there and do their thing.
Yeah.
And that seemed to work a lot better.
And I called for more of this after the first game, which was, it's an overreaction, but I still think there was some validity to it. Kobe Bryant's not going to do this every game, but he had 8 assists. He was playmaking for other players, and it isn't kind of a forgotten part of his game where people just assume he's Carmelo, from 2 years ago. And, Kobe is a playmaker. Most of the time it ends up in him making a play for himself, but he does need some more freedom to kind of make things happen because he still – no matter what we think of his skills declining and his athleticism declining, he still draws that attention from the defense. They're not buying into it as much as we are, which probably means it's somewhere in the middle. And you give him a little freedom to make plays, yeah, he's going to make mistakes, but at the same time, he can get other guys involved in ways that we don't expect.
Well, I wrote this morning on the inbounds, I talked about how this is the most efficient I've seen him in years. He's back to... It's like 2009, 2010, or 2008, 2009, but it's even more efficient because he's working off ball.
Yeah.
And that's just killer. What's interesting, I've noticed the assists, the playmaking, his assist rate is actually at 16%, which is lower than it's been the last couple of years, which is kind of weird. And it's early, but it just seems weird that the percentages wouldn't kind of match up with the eye test. That's one where I'm trying to figure out what the missing ingredient that there is, and I think it's probably has to do with the number of shots that are he's still shooting a pretty high volume when he's on the floor. He hasn't been on the floor as much because they've either been in blowouts or they blew out Detroit and then there was not a whole lot. They've held him out for a long time.
In
some of those games, which
freaking out last night. If you think about it, there have been 4 games. The first game he didn't have an assist, so. Yep. That's probably your big difference maker there.
Yeah, that's probably you're right. That's probably got the big weight there.
What about those exciting New York Knicks?
What about those?
You wrote about Knicks? you gave them all kinds of awards this morning.
I did. I gave them all the awards in the world. It's 2 games, and I wrote the book, the Baseline Awards, this morning, and I'm waiting for the impending fallout from Commoners being this is the stupidest column in the history of everything. which is surprising because I've written a lot of those columns. In my list of stupidest columns in the history of the world, this one will probably not make the top 10. But you know, it's a strong runner for the month.
It's early though. You can get there.
But the big thing with the Baseline Awards is our objective is, you know, these games matter. It's not preseason, and while no one game determines the season, and no two games or even four games determines the season, all we're looking for is trends, and that's the entire objective. It's more of a, we call it the Baseline Awards, but it's more of a trend watch. Like, what's trending? You know, like right now, like off the blocks, Melo's gotten off to this really great start, and he's defending well. In two games, he's defended exceptionally well, and he's played really efficient offense, and he's doing all the things that you want to see from him. And so, you know, I had to kind of reward that because they looked absolutely phenomenal, and they did it against a really quality opponent in Miami, who right now is surprisingly terrible at defense.
Yeah.
You know, and then I've just been really impressed because they've used – there's been more ball movement than I have seen with the Knicks since Melo was traded there. Mike Woodson, for a whopping two games, has because the big thing is, like, the system is different. Like, it's one thing if it was just they played really well and they shot high. I could disregard that. The system actually has Felton being a playmaker, driving and kicking – to Jason Kidd, who draws the attention and then makes a sweet cross-court pass to reverse the ball, get to the weak side, and then J.R. Smith's either driving or getting it to Melo for a score. Like, they're finding ways to create open looks for guys, which is nothing like what we expected.
Right, and the three-point shooting is interesting to me because I believe they've taken 63 attempts in the first two games. I mean, that's a lot, but they've hit 30.
Yeah.
I mean, they're making them, so you might, I guess, you know, chuck them until they don't go in, but you start wondering, like, is this a perfect meld of what Woodson is taught them with, you know, the defense as an assistant last year, and then when he took over, you know, they've been great defensively the first two games, and then kind of the free-flowing Mike D'Antoni, you know, organized chaos of get shots for open guys and really just attack the defense and put huge pressure on them. And, you know, both styles seem to be working here and working together. And, yeah, it's two games, but they look great in those two games. J.R. Smith had 20 points and 9 rebounds last night.
Yep.
And it didn't take him 28 shots to get it.
Now, some of it, I think, is the first game, I think, was a lot. It was the emotional atmosphere.
Sure.
Your home opener. And, like, I'm really thinking about that a lot with a lot of these rough starts for teams. It's teams are on the road playing teams in their home openers. Like, you know, the Nuggets played Philadelphia in their home opener facing Iguodala, who they all wanted to destroy. And then they faced the Magic, who are in, like, we're going to take on the world. We'll talk about them in a second.
Yeah, we need to talk about them.
Yeah, so I wonder about, you know, kind of what's going to happen with you know, after the emotion ramps down. But you know, it's interesting because, you know, talked about D'Antoni. To me, it's not that because their pace has been one of the slowest in the league. They are just grinding the crap out of teams. And, like, this is a really sustainable playoff model, which is you have a superstar scorer in Carmelo Anthony who's now finding good opportunities to score versus bad. They're getting good ball movement, and they're basically punishing you by making you move constantly until you make a mistake and then having a good shooter take a good shot and hitting it. It's like, it's so simple. It's like,
yeah, I guess it's more of the Dallas Mavericks model then from 2011.
Yeah, and that really, yeah, that's actually a really great comparison. That's really what they're doing. They're just grinding the crap out of teams.
Let's get to the Magic, because how do I put this delicately? The Orlando Magic this year seems to, like, be putting a lot of Magic fans into, like, this genitalia measuring contest of nobody believed in us. You know, you guys all thought we were going to be terrible and unwatchable, and look at us, 2-0, having fun. Look at us. Like, the experts don't know anything, blah, blah, blah. And you brought up a good point in the Baseline Awards of, hey, Cavs started out 4-3 when LeBron left, and then it fell apart. And I look at the Magic team, and I'm like, yeah, you guys are playing awesome so far. Congratulations, you're losing the lottery.
Right.
Like, and it's like, oh, the number one team doesn't always end up. Right, but you want a top four pick.
Yep.
Like, if you can guarantee yourself a top four pick and draft intelligently, that's what you do. And it's two games. They could end up, you know, 16-66. Who knows? But, like, I people in Orlando Magic fans have asked me, like, what are we supposed to hope for? And I've always thought, what did I hope for when the Timberwolves were rebuilding? Competitive losses. Like, you want good basketball. You want a competitive game so your young guys can learn, you know, the ins and outs of close games and, you know, trial and error and baptism by fire and all that crap. But ultimately, I think you want to lose. Like, you got to be okay with losing and almost hope for losing, which is, you know, people are like, oh, that's not a fan. As a fan, you should want them to build towards a championship. This is not a championship team. How did they do that? Go draft well at the top of the draft. And it's about perspective, and I know that's not easy to do when all we've been conditioned for is like, hey, wins, 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 but this Orlando Magic team is going nowhere, like absolutely nowhere as constructed, which is how they should be a year after getting rid of their superstar and franchise piece. Like, that's how it should be. But at the same time, you know, it's this genitalia measuring that I cannot stand, like this attitude of, oh, look at us. Look, you had no idea. It's like, you have no idea. Like, this isn't good for the long-term viability of your franchise.
A couple things. Like, one, I mean, you know, I got on Twitter, and they were basically saying, like, well, it's a weak draft anyway. And I was like, so getting the 14th pick in a weak draft is going to be better than getting the 4th? Like, if it's a weak draft, you need to make sure that you're at the top.
Right.
Two, I mean, the only thing that gives me pause is this, is the impression, there's sometimes the perception of players is worse than what they actually are. Shocker.
What?
Even with guys like Kobe, but with also with a lot of the times is with these marginal players. Jameer Nelson is not a bad point guard. There are bad point guards I can point to in this league.
Yeah.
Jameer Nelson is not one. He, when healthy, has been a good point guard. Now, he should not have gotten that contract. That doesn't help them long term. Glenn Davis, oh, God, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to, I don't, because there are legitimately times when you go, okay, I think Glenn Davis can do that. And then there are times when you go, there is no way he's going to sustain that.
Right.
And trying to figure out what it's going to be is really difficult. And they're pointing to a Flalo. You know, Flalo kind of had a rough start. He kind of got off last night, and that's good. You know, there's a bunch of other guys. J.J. Redick is having a fantastic year. He's having a fantastic week. He's
right.
You know, started exceptionally well, and I've always thought that Redick could do more. I always thought that SVG really limited him, and Eddie Rivera over at Magic Basketball doesn't agree with this, but I always felt like Redick was used primarily as a decoy and never used as, like, it was never like, okay, let's make sure we get JJ open, and they're starting to do that, and Redick's an incredible shooter, and I don't think people really understand. Chris Ballard in the R Basketball talks a lot about it, how, like, look, you can improve as a shooter, but if you're going to be a great shooter, it's ingrained. It's natural.
Right.
The guys are born with it. J.J. Redick was on this planet to shoot the basketball. And so I look at that and I'm like, okay, you got a big guy that can score. You've got a capable point guard and you've got a shooter. If you get hustle guys like Vucevic and you get, you know, Ione and you have these guys, why can't you sneak your way? And then I'm like, yeah, but you can only sneak your way to like 30. You still can't, you know, you still can't get into the playoffs with that kind of a model unless somebody really becomes a star. And you're right that I think it really holds them down. And, you know, the idea is like, well, they're going to have cap space down the line. It's like, that's true. But I still feel like, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's good to kind of give them this validation and then kind of wind down.
Sure.
Like maybe that'll be better, you know, to kind of, and especially it'll help with the bottom line for a franchise that's going to just eat it this year. You know, to, because they've got, they put so much money into the new arena and everything. And, you know, and part of it is, I'm trying to explain, like, I would love it. I would absolutely love it if the Orlando Magic were to make the playoffs. And, like, if the Magic lasted a round longer than Dwight Howard, I would love that because I hate what Howard did to that city. But if we're looking at it realistically, there's things – I always look at it like there are things that are sustainable and there's things that are not. And I don't look at what the Magic have done as a sustainable approach. I honestly look at the Knicks and I'm like, look, if they keep doing this, that's sustainable.
Yeah. I think that – like I just look at their future and I think, all right, not a great draft class, but is it better to end up with the next DJ Augustine after next draft and then – Andrew Wiggins in the draft after that, or would you rather have Shabazz Muhammad or Nerlens Noel with Andrew Wiggins? You know, like I keep looking at yeah, it's great. You could end up in the playoffs or just outside the playoffs and at the bottom of the lottery this year, and then maybe maybe you're terrible next year, and you get your franchise player. But what if you ended up with two franchise players? Like that just seems like such a better thing, and I think it's more the attitude. And I get like the defensive nature of sports and fandom and all that, because it is difficult to root for losses, but it's the attitude of look how much you guys underestimated us. It's us against the world. It's not you against the world. It's you against yourselves. Like, that's what the team is battling right now, is an identity crisis. And you can't ask, you know, the players on the team to not play well. That's wrong. But I think that, you know, you can appreciate it you can appreciate the effort and the pride they're showing while still hoping you end up with a high draft pick.
Yeah, and you know, it's the Wiggins thing is interesting, because Wiggins has been classified for he'll be in the 2014 draft.
Right.
So, you know, I said this over the summer, and I still mean it. If I'm one of these teams that's in this position, like the Magic, or if I'm, you know, even if I was the Sixers buying them, I would have had my stats guys run an analysis and tell me who has the highest probability of having a top 10 pick or a top 10 lottery chance in 2014. And it's impossible to do that. I'm looking for percentages. That's all I'm looking for.
Right.
Is who's still likely to be bad in 2014? Like, who's got a bunch of contracts expiring? Who's going to have a bunch of their old guys retire? Who could wind up there? And I would gear all of my trades for that, because Wiggins honestly is, like, by every measure is worth the hype. There's a couple of people out there that don't believe it, but by every measure, like, he's going to be that next guy. And if that's the case, then you want to do everything possible to get that guy. Like, that's the guy that you're going to want. And it's going to create a crunch for him, because, I mean, if they're good this year and then they start off hot next year, like, not hot, if they're decent this year, you know, and they improve a little bit with another draft pick, you know, it's like, okay, well, you get a little bit better, now what? But, you know, I mean, well, I guess we're just going to, you know, we're going to, like, with everything out of the first 2 weeks, we're going to have to wait and see, because the Magic could very well go 0-3 this week and completely change things.
All right, let's talk James Harden, because okay. I don't even care about, like, the Thunder, you know, versus James Harden, like, who is, you know, who made the mistake or whatever. Just looking at his play, I don't even care what contract he got. This is just really fun basketball to watch right now. I mean, it's insane how, and it's only been a couple of games, but it's insane to look at him and just see that not a single NBA player can really do anything defensively in front of him. And I mean, there's not a lot of pressure to take the ball out of his hands. There's not a lot of pressure for guys around him helping. You know, like, everyone's doing a good job on Houston, I feel like. Lynn, I think, has played really well. Chandler Parsons is fantastic. But there's no threat to where, oh, we can't double him because this guy's going to kill us. And yet he's just destroying everybody. It's fun to see a guy dominate like this, no matter who the opponent is. It's just fun.
He gets around that first guy, and it's over. Like, that's the thing that's amazing. And he's, you know, he's leaking out in transition a lot, and that's how he's getting a lot of baskets. But I don't necessarily mind that, because to me, I'm like, I would much rather have a team. If you got a team that's this young, you know, Jeremy Lin's still young, and James Harden's still young, and Omer Asik is still young, and the rookies are obviously still young, even though they're not playing for some reason. And Chandler Parsons is still young. So, you know, why not just have them get out and go? Like, play good defense and then get out and go. Like, that's a pretty sound model. And so, like, his level of aggression has been fantastic. I want to see what's going to happen when teams start scouting him and scheming for him.
Yeah.
But it's been really great to see what he's been capable of. He's drawing fouls. He's doing all the things that you want to see. From a guy, he's doing all things you want to see from a franchise player, and that's, you know, I think that's really incredible. They need to get a big involved. That's something that they've really got to do. Like, Ashik's playing great defense, but they've got to get, you know, and it's fine if you want to have it be Greg Smith, have it be Greg Smith. I'd rather it be Terrence Jones, Royce White, but if it, you know, whatever it is, they got to get somebody involved with him to kind of get the pressure to back off of him. You got to get to where when they run the pick and roll with him in the half court set, that they've got to worry about more than just Lynn on the kick out. Like, they've got to, and Parsons on the kick out. They've got to get a big involved. But overall, I mean, like, you know, and Harden, you know, in the 45, he didn't have many assists, but overall, like, he's doing everything. Like, he's rebounding and assisting, and, like, he has taken on the reins of, I'm going to be this guy. I'm going to, and you have to love this, too. Like, you especially, like the Thunder didn't think I was worth the contract, so I'm going to show why.
Oh, God. I love the attitude. And this is, like, I'm not right often, but there was an argument back in, like, 2009, 2010 where people were saying the Thunder made a huge mistake, like huge mistake drafting Harden instead of Reek or instead of Curry. And I was like, look, you put Harden on a bad team, he could put up numbers too. Like, this is about fit and opportunities. And obviously he's grown quite a bit as a player since then. But this is one where I'm like, see, you put him on a team who Houston was supposed to be pretty bad. And he can put up numbers 4 years later, and it's just – it's fun to see a guy who was kind of doubted for really not – no reason. You know, no reason – no fault of his own. I mean, he just – he was on a team with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook early on, and so he didn't get to put up the same fun opportunities as Tyreke Evans and Steph Curry. And seeing him, like, kind of take that criticism and make it look ridiculous now. I mean, yeah, it's 4 years later, but it looks ridiculous now. It's just fun to see. And it is fun to see him be like, all right, you guys didn't want to pay me the max. Like, here, I'm going to show you I'm a max player.
And he's also grown so much, too. That's one thing I really – and for me, like, that's what I really love is the fact that this is a player that's really grown into being a star. And that's awesome to see that guys don't have to show in their first year, that they can grow into that.
You know what it reminds me of a little bit? And I wonder if you will like this comparison. Kind of like what – I mean, it's obviously not the exact same, but just – similar story arc, Tracy McGrady from Toronto to Orlando. Like, that's kind of what it reminds me of a little bit.
Yeah, that's actually pretty accurate. Hopefully he'll be healthier. But
definitely.
Yeah, that's a pretty awesome comparison. Man, Russell Westbrook chose a bad week to have a terrible week.
Oof, he had a rough one last night.
And the night before, like, he's not like, I mean, I'm a big Westbrook supporter, but he is not playing well right now on either end of the floor, and you know it's one where like I feel like he just happens to be having a bad week, and him and Durant, I think him and Durant are also probably tired. This is the first time that they've been as far as the finals, and then went straight into the Olympics, and then played through the Olympics, and then now they're dealing with Harden leaving. Like, that's a lot for guys that are under the age of 28 to go through. Like, that's rough for those guys.
Last night, Kevin Martin, 28 points on 11 shots. I mean, he didn't do much else, but he was deadly.
Well, that's the thing, is like, they're still going to get the scoring, they're just not going to get the playmaking, and that's what everyone thinks that they need, is they need the playmaker.
Yeah.
Last night what they honestly needed was, you know, they needed Kevin Durant missed a late one that he probably could have hit. That would brought him within two.
That pull up three?
A minute. But also,
was it the pull up three?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, also, like, the Hawks played really well.
They did. Yeah, that's something. I mean, you know, we can say the Thunder are missing this and missing that, but the Hawks played really, really good basketball last night.
I didn't like taking Teague out late, but it really worked. I commented on this on Twitter. I want to get your thoughts on it. I like Lou Williams so much more with what he's doing with the Hawks. I like Willie Green so much more with what he's doing with the Clippers. And I like Nick Young so much more with what he's doing with the Sixers. Like, I feel like that weird swap of those three teams with their guys of those volume bench scorers, and Green starting right now, but like, I feel like that's such an awesome kind of like triangulation. It's like, oh, that makes so much more sense. It's lit ways, but I feel like Williams was really cool last night. I wish they'd gone with Teague and Williams to close out that game, and they really would have been, I think it would have been just as, they would have still gotten the win, but the Hawks won that game without Josh Smith, man.
Yeah, I'm telling you, Josh Smith needs to go.
That's clearly what
it is. I mean, there's proof's in the pudding. Anthony Tolliver leads them to a win.
That's his. Everyone kind of forgot, and not forgot, everyone still continues to not realize Al Horford is so freaking good.
Oh, he's a monster. He's an absolute monster. No, I'm with you. I won't agree on the Willie Green aspect of what you just said, because I really cannot stand Willie Green's game. And here is a good way of measuring whether a guy is worth it or not. James Herbert of Hardwood Paroxysm, the producer for HoopSpeak Live, he hates Willie Green. And he loves everybody. If James Herbert hates Willie Green, there's a reason not to accept him as an NBA player. But, you know, you're dead on with it. Nick Young looks great with the Sixers. Lou Williams, I love the way he played last night. I love the way he's played so far. And I just don't get the Devin Harris love at this point from Drew. I mean, Teague was great on both ends of the floor. And Harris isn't a bad player, but he's just not a guy I would think this guy's got to end the game for us.
Also, Anthony Morrow did a killer job on Durant last night.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah.
That is not a guy you expect to see that. There was at one point Durant tried to clear out with the ball in front of him, and Morrow just took it out of his hands. Like, he went for the reach through with the ball, the swim through, and Morrow just reached down and grabbed it, took it away, and then threw an outlet pass for a fast break dunk.
I mean, it's what we've always known. Anthony Morrow just needs a chance to be a defensive stopper.
Exactly. Man. One more thing on Willie Green. The reason I like him in L.A. is because they're using him almost exclusively as a spot-up shooter out of the corner.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. Like, they're letting Crawford kind of be like the – like, Crawford has moved into the Nick Young role where it's like he can do whatever he wants and create and do all the weird crossover stuff that he does, which, you know, bombs over Baghdad. But
I am enjoying the hell out of this – Jamal Crawford Clippers experience. It will probably end horribly, but I am going to soak it all in while it's working.
Yeah, that's going to be really. I like a lot of what I've seen out of the Clippers. I like the Western Conference playoff race is looking as tough as expected. If especially Denver can get back on track, because the Clippers, the Warriors, and the Grizzlies have all looked really good to start the season. I've been really impressed with Memphis in terms of they haven't. I was worried they would start slow because it would be an emotional letdown and kind of a weird, you know, there's a lot of new ownership, and then, like, they've been together a while, so they can kind of stagnate, and instead they're being very businesslike, everyone's healthy, and they're playing great defense. Like, that was a great Clippers game the other night, even though I hated watching it, because it just makes me sick trying to see the Grizzlies match up with them. But, you know, I really feel like that Western Conference playoff race is going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, before we go, couple of matchups intrigue me tonight. I love the Jazz Grizzlies matchup. Just a couple of teams with good size. You know, the Grizzlies aren't as deep up front as Utah, but then again, I don't think anybody is. But that should be a real fun one. And Kyrie Irving versus Chris Paul. That in LA, that's going to be a fun late game to check in on.
I would say so if it weren't for the fact that I really think the Cavaliers are going to be as bad as I expected. Like, they won that first game against a dreadful Wizards team, and then it was like, oh, hey, they're reality. How are you? And I feel like they're going to get they could get. I mean, unless Irving is able to just unless he goes for 40, I don't see how he's going to stay close. Utah, Memphis, you know, it's one where Mo Williams versus Mike Conley is kind of a weird mirror kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where I think Conley's got a better head on his shoulders in terms of his, like, his self-perception. Like, Conley doesn't play outside of himself ever. You know, you've got all the athleticism. You've got, you know, Zach Randolph versus Paul Millsap. By the way, who did Utah lose to on the final position the other night? The Hornets. The Hornets, when Grievous Vasquez hit a
right
the back floater for the win. The possession before, I ripped it and I couldn't get it. I couldn't get the video to come through. The final play for Utah was incredible, and it ended up with a Millsap fadeaway falling out of bounds three-pointer. I still do not understand why teams are not beating down the door to get Paul Millsap. I do not understand this.
Like, or why they keep letting him shoot at the end of games.
Yeah, like they should be beating down the door to get. And it's really weird because if Utah, I think, was better defensively, if they had a defensive stopper on the wing, I feel like they would be one of the best clutch teams in the league because Al Jefferson can score late, Paul Millsap can score late, got some shooters, like Gordon Hayward can play. Like, I feel like if they had a defensive stopper to be able to guard, to be able to defend at the end of games, they could really win a lot of clutch games because they've got so many clutch scorers.
Yeah, probably. Here's one that I want to get back to the Cavs real quick. You know, reality did set in, but they were a Brandon Jennings fall away three-pointer from the top with 0.7 seconds left from being 2-1, and this was a game in which Jennings finished 5 of 13 from the floor and 1 of 5 from three-point range, with that one make being the last shot. They played pretty well in that game.
we're gonna have to, give me another week. Maybe I'll get turned around. I'll watch.
Oh, I don't think they're gonna be good. I just think, like, you know, they could have easily been 2-1.
Give me in no particular order your three best and three worst teams from the first week.
I guess for my best teams, I would have to. I mean, the Knicks are there. I'd have to go with the Clippers and I guess the Spurs.
That's a good one.
I mean, I'm just not gonna buy into the Orlando thing. You know, they've played well, but I don't think they're a best team.
Yeah.
The worst teams I've seen: Detroit, the Wizards, and the Kings. The Kings are atrocious. I watched them up close. Well, Friday night, and that team has the worst shot selection I can remember in a long
time. Their offense is a nightmare. Check out their defensive efficiency. They've been really great defensively.
Oh, sure. No, they did a good job defensively against the Timberwolves Friday night, but offensively, I find it hard to believe they're ever going to win a game where they're not up 15 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Because that team, and you're relying on Aaron Brooks at the end of games. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's not good. I'll go with the best. I'll go with Knicks, Clippers, and I'll definitely go with Spurs. And then for the worst, I'll actually go Denver, just based off of those first two games.
Yeah, that's true.
Getting blown out by the Magic. You know, the Magic have, again, amped up, playing well. You know, Jacques Vaughn, credit, but getting blown out. Like, that was, come on. Denver, I'll go with the Wizards, and I'll go with and the Wizards, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens if they get an A back. It just, man, there's a lot of problems with that team. And then I'll go with, and the Pistons. So those are definitely the three best, three worst.
And a team with a, you know, losing, it's only been three games, but a losing record that looks awesome. This Toronto Raptors team is fun.
Oh, yeah, man.
Kyle Lowry, as Dwayne Casey said, he has that pit bull swag, which I don't really know what that means, but it fits him.
Yeah, and he's, just tough. What do you think of the Wolves so far?
I love them on defense, actually.
Yeah.
I'm really impressed with their defense. You know, they don't have, other than Steamsma and maybe Dante Cunningham and obviously Kirilenko, they don't really have anybody on that team that can defend, but they're defending as a unit. And I thought their defense was fantastic against Sacramento. I thought it was good last night. They just gave up a lot on the perimeter, and they turned the ball over 24 times to the Raptors. And you know, something we talked about before is the idea of ending possessions, and they didn't do it. Like, they gave up 16 offensive rebounds last night.
Yep.
And I think that Kenneth Hoopas mentioned on Twitter last night is between the offensive rebounds and the turnovers, they gave Toronto 40 extra chances to score last night, which, that's a lot. I mean, it resulted in 53 points.
Maybe the final word of the podcast, like, turnovers, I think, has been a huge factor in a lot of what we've seen from the results because, yep, of the early season, guys getting used to each other, more so than even in previous years. And I'm wondering if those things kind of stabilize what's going to happen.
You look at the Lakers games 2 and 3, I think they turned over the ball 45 times. And it's not just the turnovers, it's what you do after. And if you're giving up points off those turnovers, you know, it's one thing to lose a chance to score for yourself, but to give up a chance, that's what loses you games early on. Well, really any point in the season, but especially early on when everyone's trying to get to know each other. Quick prediction for tonight. More points for Kyrie Irving or Jamal Crawford?
Kyrie Irving.
Okay. I'm going to go Jamal Crawford. I'm going with my boy.
I think Irving will probably hit 30-plus.
All right. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to CBSSports.com basketball podcast. We'll be back tomorrow. You can follow us on Twitter at TalkHoops for myself, at HB Basketball for Matt, and at IonBasketball for the blog. We will talk to you tomorrow.